This is Bob Inyart inviting you to read our manuscript, The Plot, for an overview of the whole Bible. Call us at 800-836-9278. That's 836-9278. Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Three talk show hosts are better than one. So in studio, we have Greg Jackson.
Well, two and a half.
Two and a half.
I'm like a half.
And on the line, we have, wow, Steve Dace, who's made history in his radio broadcast
now that's
career.
That's a talk show host.
Steve Dace, welcome to Bob Inyart Live.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing really well. Hey, Steve, what we're hoping to find out is how you're doing with your new show. If we could remind the audience what your show was about in Iowa, and now you're on with another network, and this is the beginning of something big.
Indeed, Bob. And, you know, I don't know if your audience knows this or not, but really, I have you to thank for this, because I left my former job, great job I had at WHO, one of the historic radio stations in the country. And I had just felt for months that it was time for John Boy to see what lies behind Walton's Mountain. I had a group of Christian businessmen come to me last year after the election, and they offered to form a company around me. They thought, given the impact that we've been able, by the grace of God, to have in Iowa, they wanted to see if we could mimic that across the country in other communities and other places.
Wow.
And they gave me the resources to make that possible, but it still was not an easy decision to leave WHO.
Well, you're not kidding, but hey, Steve, remind the audience. I've told the audience in the past, but remind them, and I know this takes a little bit of bragging, but how your program did in Iowa as far as, you know, against competing talk shows in the afternoon.
Sure. We had the highest ratings and the highest advertising revenue in the history of afternoon drive on WHO.
And WHO is the leading clear channel station in Iowa, out of Des Moines. It's
Ronald Reagan launched his career on WHO.
Yes, he was our very first sports director, and WHO is routinely listed one of the top 10 or 12 talk stations in the country. Our program director, Van Harden, has won like a half dozen Marconi Awards. He's up for another one this year, so this is a nationally recognized radio station. I mean, they got resumes all over the country
right.
to replace me when I left. And I went head-to-head with Sean Hannity every afternoon for 5 years. And Hannity was on a competing station, a 50,000-watt FM station. And I would routinely beat him, sometimes almost 3-1 in ratings.
Wow. This is, I mean, it's just so extraordinary. And Iowa is the heart of the heartland. And since it's the first-in-the-nation caucus state, it has a disproportionate influence on especially Republican Party politics.
No doubt about that. I was trying to give you some props because you had sent a note to somebody who's now one of my business partners, essentially telling him, hey, the future of the industry, the network you want to build, you know, this guy in Iowa is doing what you're looking for.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was Stu Epperson Jr., whose father, of course, is the founder and chairman of Salem.
Right.
Which is the largest Christian programming distributor in the country.
Salem Radio Network, exactly.
Yep, and he called me up, one of the first people that called me up, and I didn't know who the guy was, and I had offers from presidential candidates and other media offers. I kind of put it off, and we got to about a few months ago, and I was about to take an offer, and it just didn't seem right. So I went ahead and I called Stu, and within a week, one of my partners has a plane. We flew down to Winston-Salem to meet him and his father. And lo and behold, here we are. We've launched this new show on Friday, August the 12th.
The Steve
Dace. And we're on in 10 top 100 markets.
The Steve Dace debut I've got right in front of me on my computer. And Greg Jackson, by the way, is right here in the BEL studios. And we've been looking at your website. So folks can tune in even if they're not in one of the cities you're on in, right?
That's right. In fact, our very first show, just the video stream, had over 14,000 people watch that live. And that's not even counting the various markets. The biggest market we've landed so far is Atlanta, which I think is a top 7 market. We're on the Salem station there, and we're also on in places like Norfolk and Richmond, Virginia, Salt Lake City, Jacksonville.
So this is significant because you're also on the Salem Radio Network satellite feed. making the show available nationwide. And as people who know right from wrong and appreciate principled talk radio, as they start downloading your programming, tuning in to the podcast, getting it live streaming, this is going to show Salem real numbers, and that's going to open up.
For the first time in a long time.
Yeah, right.
No, seriously, well, Steve, I predict will dwarf anything Salem has ever seen.
Greg Jackson, that voice you're hearing, Greg did a show out of Boston on WRKO Radio, which is historic, and then went to L.A., Salem
KDAR
station.
On Salem.
KDAR. That was their flagship
station. Steve's been on my show a few times.
And now Greg Jackson is best known for taking over the BEL studio here in Denver.
They won't kick me out.
Greg and Doug McBurney tend to come on and literally kick me out of the
studio.
We don't
know how, Steve.
It's a mutiny.
God's grace.
Often, but it's a lot of fun. Greg, you're saying in your estimation that with Steve Dace, they've got talent now who can do for Salem what Rush Limbaugh does for Clear Channel.
No, they have talent now. Steve, I want to find out from you what you believe really differentiates your show from the other quote-unquote conservative talk shows around the country.
Well, say from Sean Hannity.
I told Salem when I was on Salem and interviewing for a job in San Francisco that they needed to hire Steve Dace, that Steve Dace was the next step in talk radio. That it can't be Republicans are good, Democrats bad radio. People are sick and tired of it. It's transparent. It's not feeding people. And they're a Christian media organization. They need to have authentic Christians with a Christian worldview on the air.
It's I roll radio. I roll radio.
Republicans are good, Democrats are bad. Frankly, I think the numbers have stagnated or declined across the board. Hiring Steve, I think, was the greatest business decision that they've ever made. But, Steve, what do you think differentiates your show from the rest?
Well, I think there's three things that differentiate my show from the rest. Number one is that I do this show every day from, to the best of my knowledge anyway, an explicitly biblical worldview. I don't see a line of demarcation between, for example, conservative media and Christian radio. If you look at the way things are structured now, a lot of times you have Bible teachers on one station and you have provocateurs or opiners on another. To me, I don't see that there's a moat between how I communicate culturally and what I believe spiritually. In fact, what I believe spiritually is what feeds how I communicate culturally.
In other words, there's no separation between God and radio.
Or church and radio, yes. And I understand, listen, I'm a programming guy. I live in a for-profit world. And I understand that there is not a huge market for a guy who's very dry, turning pages in his Bible, and sounds like Ben Stein, the science teacher on the Wonder Years. I get that. And that's why, to me, you have to be entertaining. I believe we're entertaining, but we are entertaining with a very biblical worldview. Because to me, I think, listen, if Howard Stern can be entertaining with his worldview, and Rush Limbaugh can be entertaining with his worldview, why can't I be entertaining with a Christian worldview?
And you know why? These other guys, let's say it's Dennis Prager or Michael Medved, they actually bring their religious worldview to their shows. It's just a politically correct in the conservative realm. It's a politically correct religious worldview. You're bringing what I know of you, Steve, and what I've seen and heard for some years now, is you're bringing a biblical worldview.
Amen.
To what you're doing. And that, I think, is why you would double the ratings as compared to Sean Hannity for years, and even occasionally, like you've said, triple the ratings.
One of the main goals I have, and I've had this from the very beginning, is I want to make a biblical worldview a mainstream theological, philosophical, and intellectual proposition in America again. I want to take it out of the basement it's pretty much been in since the Scopes Monkey Trial, and I want to make it a mainstream platform for thought again. And I think that is the number one difference between me and almost everybody else in the syndicated radio industry. And I think there's a couple of others that are a little more cosmetic. My age, I'm younger. A lot of these are older guys between 50 and 60. They all sound the same. They have the same bumper music, same talking points, same style of communication. I'm a lot different, younger, a lot more confrontational. So I think that's another major difference, where I think that is something that God uses. If someone may think that my content is too narrow-minded, too incendiary, that it would never play to a mass audience. Well, I sort of have done with talk radio what FM contemporary Christian music did to FM radio, where it sounds and images like any other FM music station, but they're singing songs about a love for Christ and not the latest crush they have with the groupie backstage. That's a little bit what I do. My show sounds like you would expect a guy who's younger, my age, to sound doing a talk radio program in a major market. It's just not with the worldview that most of those guys in the major markets have.
Mm-hmm. Bob Inert Live years ago, I don't know if I ever told this to either of you guys, I was on TV for some time, and so we'd get Nielsen ratings, and here I am, a conservative Christian on a religious TV station, and they all get asterisks. That's all they get. Their rating share is too small to measure. And then LaCie Broadcasting out of Notre Dame City, South Bend, Indiana, picks up the show Bob Inert Live, this crazy one-hour call-in talk show, late night, and we start not only getting ratings and significant shares, but we start beating network programming in college towns like Notre Dame, like Indianapolis, in New Orleans. We would beat Conan O'Brien. We would beat significant late-night sitcoms on a Christian station that had never made ratings. We were getting rating shares. In fact, at the peak of the show, one out of 12 people with a TV on were watching Bob Inert Live in some of our major markets, and we got the Nielsen books to show it. So obviously, if you're willing, if you have the willingness to talk about the news of the day from a biblical perspective, there are a lot of people who will get very encouraged and want to tune in.
Let me address that, if you don't mind, because one of the things I learned from a friend of mine who is a black political activist in our community and introduced me to a lot of black ministers. One of the things that I think the black community learned at the time that it was heavily marginalized in our culture is that excellence transcends differences. If you're good at what you do, people will see beyond the things about you they're not comfortable with, they don't agree with you with, and they'll identify with you if you're good at what you do. For example, as you saw with so many African Americans involved in athletics, where, you know, maybe there's homes in the South back in the day where they would never, ever let their son come home with a black girlfriend from high school. But by golly, if he wanted to have a picture of Michael Jordan up in his room, that was okay because he was a great basketball player.
Right,
I think
right.
there is a lesson there, I think, for Christians, white, black, or regardless in mainstream culture, which is if you are good at what you do, if you do not see yourself as a victim, if you do not anticipate you're going to be marginalized, if you act as if God is sovereign over all peoples at all times in all places, and all you ultimately have to do is take the God-given abilities and talents that he has given you and use them to his glory to your fullest potential, and you're good at what you do, then that gives you license to do sort of whatever you want. And there's a great example of that. In our own state here, you had the story a few years ago of the high school football coach, Ed Thomas, who was murdered by one of his former players and became a national story.
Wow.
And Ed Thomas was a guy teaching in a public school who kept a Bible in his desk. His son, Aaron Thomas, is a very good friend of mine. They're going to be on our show next week, in fact. And I mean, this is a guy that did Bible studies in a government school classroom. Now, why didn't he get sued from the ACLU? You want to know why? Because he won like 12 state championships. And even if people didn't agree with his worldview, you know what they did agree with?
What?
Winning.
Right.
He liked winning. He was good at what he
right.
did. He could mold young men. He could win games. And he just happened to do it with this worldview. And I think too many times Christians embrace victimhood as opposed to embracing servanthood and kingship.
Wow.
Act as if your father is in charge, if he is at all times, and serve him accordingly.
Yeah.
And don't walk around waiting for the next anvil to drop at any given moment. The world gets worse no matter what I do. I've just never had that attitude, guys. To me, I've always looked at it as if I do what God has called me to do, then this will work. If I don't, it won't. Period. End of sentence.
Hey, Steve, a minute before we started the show, I was being interviewed by the Christian Post. It's ChristianPost.com, about Tim Tebow, who plays for the Denver Broncos. And there's a fan who made up a shirt, looks like a Broncos shirt, with Tebow's number 15. And instead of the name Tebow, he put Jesus. And his point was that Tim Tebow openly admits that he loves Jesus Christ, and this man wanted to make the same statement. Well, the liberals have gone ballistic, and these are the people who say that they're supportive of diversity, free speech, tolerance, and not only do they want to force their child killing and homosexuality on our culture, but they even want to force their opinion of style and what's appropriate in your expression of your belief in God or thanking someone else for being an outspoken Christian. That's a tremendous intolerance. But Tim Tebow, you know, he encourages a lot of people, like you're saying, and he plays for the glory of God, and he glorifies God in his personal life.
And I think that's why he has gotten away with it, because he's great. I think that the reason he's escaped a lot of scrutiny that others have not is because he's good at what he does. I once heard a Christian comedian make an observation. He said, you know, Catholics see Mary everywhere and Protestants see Satan everywhere. Well, I lost my job because, you know, the devil's after me. When maybe you lost your job, fool, because you were late 3 days in a row, okay? Get up on time, show up at work, and do your darn job. You know, we are not victims. We are children of the Most High God, and that comes with it both. Obviously, it comes with it both benefits, but also responsibilities.
Yeah, the Apostle Paul said that we're more than conquerors with Jesus Christ.
I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me.
Amen.
And one of the things, this is sort of the way I apply this in my job, and I would encourage your listeners to do the same. I am very rigid about my principles I live my life by. The way I do my job on the air is unwielding. I mean, I just don't yield on anything. I compromise on very little because, to me, I'm not allowed to compromise on these things. It's not a question of will. It's a question of can.
That's so key.
But off the air, in my relationships with the people I work with, you will find very few people that are as flexible and bending as I am. Mm-hmm. And I think I do that consciously to compensate for the fact that I know what I do on the air, even when I do it well, can be unsettling and uncomfortable for people. And I think it's important that they see that as a Christian, I am not just a mouthpiece for an ideology, but the principles that I articulate impact the way that I live my life and how I treat people.
So inflexible.
So I think that's important.
So inflexible when it comes to the truth and morality, but very flexible, giving people a lot of mercy and grace and latitude when it comes to style.
Yes. Hey, I'm very purist with my principles and very pragmatic when it comes to people.
All right. Hey, Steve, we're almost out of time, but how can we let this go by without talking about at least one of the Republican candidates for the nomination? How about Rick Perry out of Texas? There are a lot of people. He entered the race and he shoots up, of course, because he's a new name and a lot of people have to get to know his record. Mm-hmm. And we've started to look into his record here. We've talked about him rarely on the air in the past. But do you have anything you'd like to share? I've got a couple thoughts. But any thoughts you have?
I think there's two thoughts I have. Number one, Rick Perry is clearly meant as a substitute for Mitt Romney, who did not pass the smell test 4 years ago and won't pass it this time. So I think he's clearly in here as the alpha male governor from a highly populist state proxy, both for some conservative leaders and also the party establishment. So I think he's clearly there as an alternative to the scam known as Mitt Romney.
All right, so he's the establishment candidate, assuming that Romney is going to...
Well, I would say he's a dual establishment candidate. Mm-hmm. I think he's an establishment candidate of both the party establishment, but also the conservative, or what I call celebrity conservative establishment. Doesn't mean he's bad, but I think he's clearly their guy. And that leads me to my second point. In my research, there's basically two Rick Perrys. There's the Rick Perry from the time he took over for George W. Bush until about 2008, which was another George W. Bush type of Republican. And then there was the Rick Perry who, when faced with a primary challenge from a powerful U.S. sitting senator, moved hard right and tried to get to the right of Bobby Jindal the last couple of years. And that's the guy he's going to try to run on as president. And what will be the test for voters is to hold him to that standard and make him account for the things he did before that time period to see if those things were positions or convictions. And that's why we have a primary.
And here's my take on Perry is that not too many years ago, he was not only supportive of Al Gore's candidacy for president, he ran Al Gore's campaign in Texas, And for him to say, well, Al Gore wasn't into global warming, he was completely on the global warming bandwagon back then. He was the cheerleader.
He was just as wacky.
He was just as wacky, and he was a pro-abort, an aggressive child killer. So here's Rick Perry leading the campaign for Al Gore for president in Texas. That's strike number one. Strike two is the Gardasil debacle, where he gives this executive order that he has no authority to do whatsoever. And he says that every sixth grade girl in the state of Texas has to be given Gardasil, which is a vaccine for the HPV virus, which there's all kinds of serious health concerns. Merck, who is the pharmaceutical giant that sells this Gardasil, he had Merck's leading Texas lobbyist as his chief of staff. And this is a way
I'm sure it was just coincidental, Bob.
Just coincidental, because then they can't be sued because there were serious complications and even deaths. And if it's a vaccine ordered by the government, they can't be sued, so they're protected. But this is something you give to young girls to tell them that if you are sexually immoral, you have sex outside of marriage, don't worry, you're not going to get the human papillomavirus. So it's very destructive to the psyche of families, especially young girls in the whole state of Texas. And now this is his big mea culpa because he wants conservative pro-lifers. He needs the base. So he says, I made a mistake. I should have had a conversation before I did it. So he's not admitting there was anything immoral or unwise. He's just saying the way he did it was wrong. Like Romney instituted homosexual marriage in the wrong way. He should have done it the right way.
Not to mention, Steve, maybe he could come up with the argument that endorsing Al Gore was a long time ago, but only a couple of years back, he essentially endorsed for president of the United States early on a guy who is fundamentally no different than Al Gore in many regards, at least on the social issues, and that's Rudy Giuliani, estranged from his kids on his third marriage, pro-homosexual rights, civil unions, which is a euphemism for gay marriage, pro-taxpayer-funded abortions.
I totally agree with that. In a vacuum, I think criticizing a guy because of what he did a fourth decade ago is a little over the top, because the goal is to have people that used to be supporters of the Al Gore's of the world.
Oh, sure, right.
But when you put it in the context of supporting a Giuliani recently, it makes it harder for him to make the defense that was another lifetime ago and I've known since 1988. One of the ways I filter candidates is if they agree to come on my show. And the reason I do that is because, given the size of the audience we have and who that audience is, the only reason you wouldn't come on is because you know you're going to get asked probing worldview questions and you don't want to ask them, or you don't want to answer them.
Right.
And so far, Governor Perry has not agreed to come on the show. And in general, I don't vote for candidates who won't come on and face that line of questioning, because in my experience, the only reason they have not is because they didn't think they could withhold the scrutiny, and so they wanted to avoid us. So I think that will be interesting to watch over the next 6 months, is whether or not Governor Perry, as, say, Rick Santorum or Michelle Bachmann have done in the past, if he's willing to make himself available to our audience. And if he's not, well, I think that will speak, quite a bit about a lot of things that you guys just brought up.
Steve, speaking of Michelle Bachmann, American Right to Life has FedExed and has had now a survey hand-delivered to her office asking if she will support personhood. You know, we have a personhood bill in the U.S. Senate. Roger Wicker, U.S. Senator from Mississippi, has a tremendous human life amendment bill in the U.S. Senate that has about a dozen U.S. senators that have co-sponsored the bill, and it is perfectly principled. It is a fabulous bill. So we're asking all the candidates, including Michelle Bachmann, will you endorse Senator Wicker's bill? Will you endorse personhood, the federal personhood human life amendment? Will you endorse the state personhood efforts? We're on the ballot in Mississippi this year in November with Amendment 26, a beautiful personhood bill. So we're hoping and praying, the personhood movement is hoping, that we can get a candidate who says they're pro-life to have the courage to say, I believe in the personhood and the God-given right to life of every child from the beginning of that child's life.
Well, I can tell you this. The individual that ran her Iowa campaign is one of my very best friends, and he has fought tirelessly for life at conception or personhood in our state for the last 4 years that he has been in our legislature. Mm. So now, on her end, I actually had a private conversation with her about this. She will tell you she's a staunch supporter of life at conception. She did not seem very informed, however, about the term personhood.
Right.
And I think what's happened here to people like Michelle Bachmann is that there is a transition undergoing in our movement between those of us who say, we just can't do this Stephen Douglas thing anymore. We've tried this for 40 years and haven't won anything, nothing. We have got to go and do the William Lloyd Garrison thing, and that is assert the principle here from the outset and not give away the moral high ground in a moral crusade, and then not be shocked after a generation when we don't win, when we actually grant the premise of the wrong team.
Wow.
And I think there are candidates like Michelle Bachmann, for example, that are caught in the middle of this between people she's close to, like my friend who's in the state senate here in Iowa, and who's a staunch advocate of personhood, or people like Phyllis Schlafly, who she's close to, and recently wrote a piece saying personhood was a mistake and the wrong tactic.
Right.
And I think so many of these, even the really conservative principled Republicans, they are caught in a tug-of-war of relationships between those of us who represent a new paradigm and those who they came up through the ranks with that represent the old one. And I think that a lot of these sorts of changes that are needed in our movement are probably not going to happen in total until another generation of leadership who is completely untethered from the old paradigm emerges and has no real fealty or loyalty or relationship to the old paradigm and the people that, you know, instituted it.
Personhood has revitalized the pro-life movement. There are now hundreds of thousands of people in the country involved in promoting personhood. Michelle Bachmann, I think, not only on principle should she do the right thing, but when she taps into that energy and that
powerful
vision for victory, personhood is the dagger in the heart of liberalism.
Yes, it is.
Personhood is the thing that will make the substantive change in the future of our country. Pretty much everything else is rearranging the deck chairs. The debt ceiling battle, that was rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. That's going to change nothing. But personhood is what can help this country.
Steve, we got a minute left. Are there any candidates who understand the moral premise of what Bob was just saying? In other words, that our economic problems are not the main issues, that there's an underlying moral and spiritual issue and problem that is the root cause of all of our problems. Is there one candidate who understands that?
I would say privately, Michelle Bachmann understands that as well as anybody I've ever met. I've yet to hear her articulate it, however, publicly. And then last Thursday, in one-minute diatribe, I thought Rick Santorum gave the best summation of my philosophy of governance I've ever heard from a national candidate.
And he credited you as well with it.
Yes.
Maybe you need to talk to Bachmann as well.
All right. Hey, Steve Dace, what an honor to have you on the air here in Denver. Hey, let's hope that a radio affiliate ends up picking up stevedace.com. It's available via Salem, right? Right here in Denver.
Yes. All you've got to do is, it's on a network of 800 stations. You just got to decide you want it.
All right.
There's no radio like it. It's awesome.
Thanks, Steve Dace.
Thanks, Steve.
God bless you.
Guys.
And thank you, Greg Jackson.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Bob.
Good to have you in studio. Maybe next week, you and Doug McBurney, maybe.
You never know.
All right. We'll see. God bless you. KGov.com.